Morning.
Somebody left their Bible up here. Who? Okay. You better get it, Willie, because I don't want you not turning to the Bible. And we have an evangelism committee meeting today, and I know, look out, Willie. Will Willie make it? Yes, he will. We have an evangelism committee meeting today. Some of you won't be able to make it. I'd appreciate it, not only if those who were planning to make it. We have 10 pizzas coming afterwards, and I usually eat whatever you don't. And if you want to force your preacher to commit an act of gluttony, being an accessory to sin, then you need to come to the meeting. If you have a husband and a child, you can bring them too, okay? It's going to be about an hour and 15 minutes. We have to discuss over the marketing arm of God's love story. And even if you're not on the evangelism committee, if there are some people that are here that do have a heart for reaching out to the lost and you'd like to have a lunch meeting with us downstairs, go ahead and come. There'll be plenty to eat. I need your input for that, and the elders do as well, because this is for the marketing arm of a nine-month program we have starting on the first week of September. And it's very important that we have good input for it. I have some sheets, have some decisions to be made. Please try to come to that at 12:15 following the service today. I'd like to welcome those who are visiting. We have an elder from Tennessee, so we have to be on our best behavior. And we also have some other people visiting us. We have a lot of people who are traveling today. A lot of people started their vacations. Dave Miller and his group are at the grandfather's funeral in western Pennsylvania. And we do have a lot of people joining us live via Ustream. We welcome you as well, including those at Golden Living. We do appreciate you, and we have a lot of fun on the Bible studies there on Thursdays. So if you'd like to come to a Bible study, we have them pretty much all Thursday afternoon. And we had about 37 we studied with last Thursday. And it's kind of nice to be able to study with somebody who, I mean, think about this. Where else can you go in Camp Hill and have a study with 37 people, and there's no problem? I mean, some of the times it's just basically because there's not enough room. I mean, I don't know anywhere else you could have that. And people who are genuine, people who love to see you. So I know Sister Haas came to one this week. We had a lot of fun, didn't we, Sister Haas? Can't say anything, Church of Christ, can't know. And but we had a lot of fun there visiting with them this week. And remember Joe Gildow and Ann Bauer. They're kind of in the attempts of trying to be able to move to Golden Living. So, and if they end up going there, then we're going to have a very aggressive visiting program for them, since it's only 1 mile from here. We have the Dutch family that's leaving at the end of the month. Bye. And no, we'll miss you. Do you need any help moving, loading things up? Because I can get Willie to go over to your place and help if you wish. And we're starting a two-part series. Next week, we got a really fun lesson. In honor of our Supreme Court, the oligarchy that oversees the laws of the land, they're going to make a decision either imposing gay marriage on all states, or they're going to say they can't do that. Either way, I'm going to have a sermon next Sunday morning unveiling a new document called the Certificate of Holy Matrimony. And I think you'll find it interesting. I believe it'll put marriage in the proper perspective and really what the government has to do with it. And so I hope you can come back next week for that. And then the following week, Brian will be preaching while I'll be down in Florida. And he'll be covering God's love story, what to be prepared for. It's really to unveil what we're going to be covering over 9 months. Now this morning we have a two-part series, first part this morning, second part this evening, preparing for shipwreck. And if you can come back this evening, I think you'll find it beneficial. We're only covering two of those points this morning. and preparing for shipwreck. We have a lot of shipwrecks in our life. So a lot of times our vessels of life crash on the barrier reefs, or we run aground, or we get tossed to and fro in the waves of tyranny. Well, it was an early winter day of 60 AD, and the location was the port of Fair Havens on the southern side of Crete in the Mediterranean Sea. There were 276 passengers, most of them imperial prisoners, that were aboard an Alexandria grain ship that was headed for Italy. Acts 27, verse 6. There was boisterous and treacherous waves blowing. They took a tiny refuge in this little tiny bay. I think I have a picture of it up here. That's the modern day Bay of Fair Havens. And they had to make a decision. With winter coming on, from early winter till early spring, the Mediterranean Sea is one of the worst places to be out there with a boat. And they had to make a decision. Are we going to press on to go a little bit further to get to the western side of Crete? Or do we stay in this place that doesn't even have a McDonald's or an ATM machine? And one of those prisoners, a man named the Apostle Paul, offered some common sense advice in Acts 27, verse 10. He said, "Men, I perceive that the voyage will certainly be with damage and great loss, not only of the cargo and of the ship, but also our lives." Ignoring the true danger of being swept out to sea, the centurion in charge actually paid more heed to the pilot and the captain of the ship and said, "Okay, these guys were prideful. They said, we could make it. We could just hug the edge round to this really nice port. It's really a nice place to winter. I want to go for it." So the centurion said, "Okay, we'll do it." Acts 27, verse 11. Now, being on that body of water during the winter season was one of the most brave or stupid things you could do. For the winds blew contrary, the waves were high, and the air was constantly filled with a mist that made your viewing distance very, very short. And many of the ships that traveled in this part of the world during this time of the season, at this time, they ended up in the bottom of the ocean. Nobody would survive from those. Things were so bad that the emperor actually had to guarantee or warranty any loss that any sailors would go because he wanted his precious cargoes to constantly be coming into Rome. And when ships said, captains of ships said, "No, I'm not traveling there. I'm not going to lose my vessel and maybe lose my life." And the emperor finally said, "Okay, I'm going to warranty all shipments of grain or supplies into my country during the winter season." And then that kind of loosened it up a little bit. But this is likely one of those ships. I have a picture of a model of an ancient grain ship from Alexandria. Roughly during that time. And so they're pretty impressive for the time period. Heading out to port, the captain tightly hugged the shoreline. As you can see right over here, he would have hugged the southern side. He's trying to stay close. But then Euroquilo, a big wind swept down from the top of the mountains and started pushing them out to sea. And things began to be troublesome for them. In verses 14 and 15, it talks about how they're being driven out to shore. And once you sweep out to this area here, you get that wind. It's going completely contrary to where you need to go. And as land began to disappear from the sight, hope of their surviving this issue became very grim. In fact, they were destined for shipwreck at sea. Over the next 2 weeks, instead of hugging along this side and trying to get to here, they're being swept way out here. And they're just being tossed to and fro. Can't see where they're going. The winds are blowing horribly, sweeping over the boat. This is a very scary time. And then in Acts 28, verse 1 and 2, when they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta. The natives showed us extraordinary kindness, for because of the rain that had been set in, and because of the cold, they kindled the fire and received us all. Now, I just jumped over a whole bunch to show you they make it in the end. In case if you're not familiar with it, God pulls them through. It'd be easy just to press on to Acts 28 and ignore everything and just be satisfied with the outcome. But it's in the steps of preparation in dealing with a future shipwreck that we can learn quite a bit about. Things did not simply fall into place, but certain actions were taken to make sure that they would survive. To survive a shipwreck is possible if we follow five simple points of the text. The first thing in preparations for a looming shipwreck in your life, number one, damage control. In Acts 27, verse 16 through 19, we see five things they did almost immediately. As they were drifting out from the island of Crete, the ship's boat, the one they pulled behind, they hoisted up. The undergirding of the ship took place next. They let down the sea anchor, which would have been toward the rear of the boat. And being violently driven and storm-tossed, they began jettisoning some of the cargo. And then on the third day, they started throwing the ship's tackle overboard. When they saw this danger was imminent, certain steps had to be taken or they may sink right out there in the middle of the ocean. They were attempting to go into damage control mode. The ship's boat, that small vessel, the dinghy they pull behind, if you don't pull that thing in, it becomes a battering ram and it will hit the boat all day long. So they pulled that thing in and hoisted it up, get it close to them. And then the undergirding of the ship, they would run ropes from the hull and back, or from the transom and back, and they would undergird it and tie them tight. Because as those waves were pounding the boat, you don't want it to start breaking apart out there. So they reinforce it by undergirding the ship. Then they let down the sea anchor, because if you're dragging the sea anchor, at least the ship is going to be facing the waves, and it could be cut and sliced instead of them hitting and just tossing the boat wherever it goes. That's the least position to be in danger. And then they jettisoned some of the cargo. They didn't jettison all of it, but they jettisoned a lot of the stuff they didn't need. Perhaps they had a big supply of pots, things that are heavy. And they started pushing that over. It didn't really matter at that point. Dead men going down with a ship full of whatever they have isn't worth it. They started lightening the ship so it would ride the top of the wave instead of staying low and having the wave sweep over. And then they even threw over some of the ship's tackle. Oftentimes ships had three or four times the amount of tackle that they needed. Extra ropes, maybe they have a few extra items on there that might weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds. They simply threw them overboard and went with just the bare necessities. This is five preparations they had to initially survive what could be a disaster for them. Well, how does that apply to us in the world of Christianity? What do we as Christians do when our shipwreck is approaching us? What if there's just been an unexpected budget-busting scenario looming on the horizon? You found out you got this big bill. Maybe that roofing bill came due, and you were barely making it, and you got water leaking in to your roof. What do you do now? What if we just found out that we might be laid off or on risk of furlough, losing some of our personal economics? We need to immediately take those common-sense steps of stabilizing, like eliminating those eating out at the restaurants experiences and those special buying purchases that we might not really need. Perhaps consider selling a few items that you don't actually need. Downsize. Life, when it becomes simpler. I talk with many people that used to have a lot, and then all of a sudden disaster hits their life and they're forced to go into a downsizing. And you know what? It brings with it a great amount of happiness. You don't have to manage everything. You really don't need a lot to get by in this life. And most people in the world prove that every single day. And we need to be like that. Go to a stable position. We need to be in a position of proactivity, not inactivity. Always trying to take the best first step. And it's no different than facing bad weather on the road. If you're traveling, you slow down. You try to adjust to the driving conditions. You might turn your flashers on. You go into a damage control mode to limit what possibly could happen to you at that time. Had they not shed and made those moves, shed the extra weight of the boat, we would never even arrive at chapter 28 of Acts. But they took precaution measures in order to survive it. And we also have to do that as well. Don't just sit back and just let everything happen. If you expect God to do everything and you have no responsibility in it, that's wrong. You know, God says, if you see a brother or sister naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you go to them and say, be you warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? You know, we need to try to enlist other people in helping that individual. We have to be in a position where we don't necessarily need that. I once talked to a guy, and he barely had ends meet. He was requesting help from the church. He said, I need some help. But he had like an HBO package and all the football teams and the big flat screen TV. And you know, I went to visit him, and he had more stuff than I had. And I said, brother, you know, this is messed up. I mean, downsize. You know, if God is God, and He is, and God controls the circumstances in your life, and He does, what is God saying? You know, oftentimes we don't want to be inactive in a time like that. We don't want to be like a deer frozen in the headlights. We need to go into action, and that's called damage control. The second thing that we need to do is that we have to keep a positive attitude. Keep a positive attitude. In Acts 27, verse 22 through 25, yet now I urge you, keep up your courage, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only the ship. For this very night an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I serve, stood before me, saying, do not be afraid. Paul, you must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those that are sailing with you. Therefore, keep up courage, men, for I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. God sent a message to Paul via the lips of an angel. And that angel gave him the greatest positive message of encouragement. You will survive. And not only you, all of you will survive. The ship's going to be destroyed, but you're all going to make it, all 276 of you. The angel could see how it's already going to work out. But Paul didn't know how it was going to work out. He knew it was. And Paul was greatly encouraged with that. And not only that, he shared that encouragement with others who were in the same boat, literally. He shared the information with them for the purpose to encourage them. Encourage, to put courage in. That's what it's about. Keep your courage. Hold your courage in. Be brave. And even if they did not believe it, Paul did and felt obligated to share that message with others. He was being positive in the most negative of environments. Well, brothers and sisters, when you know that there's a shipwreck about to occur in your near future, you better stay positive. You have to have the attitude of gratitude. You have to be absolutely positive in all circumstances. You have to be that way. You might have not been feeling well for quite some time, and you say, I'm going to go get those tests done. And what are you going to do when the doctor sits you down and says, I have some bad news for you? Are you going to stay positive? You're on your vacation with a family, and the car's engine decides to go on vacation from you, and you're 800 miles from nowhere. Are you going to stay positive in that atmosphere? I read a story about a brother in Christ who had a fall off a roof, and he was badly hurt. And he was one of the most positive people you'd ever see. Kind of drove people nuts. Everything was always so positive with this man. And he went to the hospital and looked kind of grim. And the doctors and nurses were trying to stabilize him. And they said, are you allergic to anything? And he said, yes. Okay, he's in great pain. His back broken in many places. He's just in extraordinary pain. Are you allergic to anything? He says, yes, and they all stop. They want to know what he's allergic to, so they're not going to kill him at that point. And he says, gravity. And they just all burst out laughing. He had such a positive attitude. He reached out to people. The whole time they're trying to help him. And in his recuperation, I mean, they didn't think he was going to make it. The man walks today. And they attribute that to his positive mental attitude. Because if you think you're defeated, if you're going to have that negative attitude, like the Israelites, God delivered them through the sea. And what did they do? They groaned. They moaned and groaned. This is bad. We used to eat this. We had great water here. We're eating this bread. What is it? It's manna. That's why we call it that. And they're complaining about that. God's giving them cornflakes from heaven. We want meat. We want onions. We want garlic. We want all this. These 10 times they have grumbled against me. The opposite of grumbling is to be positive, to have a positive outlook. If somebody comes to you and they try to tell you, you know, James says that, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Nobody likes going through a trial, but we're to have joy. It's you determine in your mind it's going to be joyous. And how do you do that? It's very simple. You keep in mind that you are under the creator of the entire universe. God is in control. We are more than conquerors through him who loves us. Need I remind you, Jeremiah 29 verse 11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. Philippians 4 verse 13, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Hebrews 13, 6, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Nothing. You don't have anything to fear when you're with God. If a man's ways are right with God, even his enemies shall be at peace with him. 1 John 4, verse 4, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Psalm 34, 7, the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Nahum 1:7, the Lord is good, a stronghold in a day of trouble, who knows those who take refuge in him. Romans 8:28, he works all things together for the good of those who love him. Do you have to be reminded all the time? Just take on the attitude of being positive in any and every circumstance. And as you're rocking up and down, you see that shipwreck coming, at least you can say, you know, I've always wanted to go there. Paul always had a positive attitude. You know, they lock him up in prison. He started a prison ministry. You know, it didn't matter. They'd say, hey, you know what? You just shut your mouth, Paul. You don't be preaching Christ. We're gonna go ahead and persecute you. Well, to live is Christ. Oh, yeah? Well, we're going to kill you then. Well, to die is gain. Oh, yeah? We're just going to let you be. And Paul says, I reckon that the suffering of this present time is not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed unto me. It didn't matter the way Paul looked at it. I'm going to keep a positive attitude. Whether they kill me, I'll be with Christ. Whether they let me live, I'll serve Christ. If they persecute me, I'll get more from Christ. Bring it on, baby. It doesn't matter. Paul was excited about that. I mean, we got to let God guide our steps. A positive mental attitude is crucial if you're going to survive the shipwrecks of your life. And if at any time your attitude becomes negative, be prepared to go down with the ship. You will not survive. And I've seen that numerous times. I've seen people survive cancer for 15, 20 years when it should have taken them out. 10 rounds of chemotherapy. And those people, let me tell you, doctors will explain to you, those people who make it a long time, they're not the negative ones. They're just simply not. They are not the negative people. It's the positive ones. The ones you go in and you're visiting and they're at the point of death. And then you feel better and when you leave. I knew a lady like that named Lois Manchester. She had cancer for more than 15 years. She was always so positive. She was one of the greatest encouragers I ever met. And one time I went to go visit her in the hospital. She was very gravely ill. She went on to live 7 more years, though. She just had everybody, like, living on the edge. And she was really down, and I kind of peeked around the corner. She would never not want you to see her smile. And, you know, I had to peek in there. It was always fun. You kind of peek around the corner. Hi, how you doing? She was just down. Now she's happy. Because she was not going to let anything bring her down. And that's what we have to remember. You're rocking back and forth in your wavy life. your ship is being battered, you don't know if you're about to go down, you need to simply keep a positive attitude. God's working behind the scenes. He's always working behind the scenes. Be positive. Years ago, a shipwrecked man was once washed ashore in an uninhabited island. And using a few things that he managed to salvage from the wreck, along with what he found on the island, he managed to build a hut. And this little hut was the only protection he had from these harsh elements, and the only place he could safeguard his meager possessions. One morning, he went out on a lengthy food search. And when he returned that evening, he was in shock. He found out that the hut that he had was engulfed by the flames of the campfire that he left burning. And the loss of this hut devastated him. He spent that night despondent, sleeping in the sand. It was horrible. Well, the next morning he woke up early and to his surprise saw a ship anchored off the island. Shortly a crew member rowed toward the island and he stepped ashore and told the man, "We saw your smoke signal and came to rescue you." In closing, we always have to make sure we have that positive attitude. Yes, we go into damage control mode, but we do it in a positive way. Many years ago, I knew a family who they called me up. They were in a congregation in Texas. I knew them for many years, and they called, and they were almost at the point of divorce. And they were arguing over money, and I spoke with them about, you know, it was going back and forth. Here I am, they're both each on a phone, and I'm in the middle. I'm thinking, did I ask for this? Finally, I said, stop! Stop! One question. Have you been giving generously to the Lord? No. We added it up. They were giving less than 0.1%. I said, you expect God to bless you? I said, here's what you need to do. Downsize. Start selling things. Get rid of the cable. You go to the elders of the church. You tell them you're going to be committed to giving this much toward whatever work. And you're going to stick with that. 6 months later, they called me and told me their marriage was never better. I said, well, what happened? She said, well, we got rid of those things and we found out that you have more fun eating in than you do eating out. And you also have more fun playing games than you do watching TV. And you also have more fun praying than you do going miniature golfing. And you have a great joy in giving to God first and watching what the first fruits do. I talked with that family 8 years after that. They're still ever so happy because they looked at the positive side of things in all that. There is a God in heaven, and he's saying, well done, you good and faithful servant. You need to always be prepared when you're about to shipwreck to, number one, go into damage control mode, and number two, to stay positive. Tonight, in part two, we're going to cover the next three steps, patterned after the shipwreck that Paul was in. Three other things we must know if we're going to survive the shipwrecks that we come into in this life. You're going to have a shipwreck. Your boat was never designed to last forever, but your heavenly vessel is going to last. But you don't have that yet. So I hope you can come back tonight and you can join us for the second part of this series at 5:30. If you'd like to respond to the Lord's invitation at this time, we encourage you to do so while we stand in